You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since Trapper Keepers were all the rage. Now dad's reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm Eddie Ferguson.
And I'm JB Wagner. And on today's episode, we never look back, darling. It distracts from the now of reviewing The Incredibles. But first, Eddie, you just got back from a big trip. What's going on, man?
I did. Got back from big trip. And so today, I was gone for a week. So today I tried to take some time with Lewis, you know, just kind of check back in. How is he doing? And apparently while I was gone, he and Sarah had a lot of conversations about marriage and that he would get married one day.
Whoa.
So we sit, we're at, yes, I know, at like almost 5 years old, he's talking about this. And he literally says it like this. Are you ready? He goes, Daddy, this is how this works. I walk away from you. I go find a pretty girl and I marry her and then you die.
That's amazing because that's perfect sense.
And I went, well, you're not wrong, but we've got some time until all that's going to go
that's
down.
Incredible.
Yes, buddy. That is how it works.
I find pretty girl.
I walk away from you, find a pretty girl. I marry her.
The walk away from you part is great. The walk away part, yes. And then ending with, and then you die. Because you have nothing. Once you help him find a pretty girl, you're done.
I'm done.
That's incredible.
So I did ask, though. I said, you know, normally, buddy, there's a lot of time in between you getting married and me dying. Do you think we could just be friends? Do you think we could be friends during that time?
What did he say?
Oh, yeah, Daddy. We can be best friends.
I love the way that his mind works. It's incredible.
So that was my conversations today, which were quite enlightening, reflective on my own life and death. But enough about me. We have some Disney news to get to.
Yeah, so the big thing from this weekend is obviously Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 came out. I went and saw it this weekend, but I'm 100% sure you did not see it. So you will not be getting a review this week of that film. You'll have to wait maybe another week or so to get that from us. But it made $110 million this weekend, which was on par with what they thought it was going to make, which is slightly more than what Ant-Man and the Wasp 3 made. Eddie, was that good, bad? Like, how do we judge how great this opening box office was for Guardians?
I read an article in which the title was Guardians Volume 3 is really good, but Marvel is still really bad.
What?
So I was like, okay, like I just saw like the title of the headline, I should say, because I have not seen it. I hope to go see it soon, and so I'm trying to, you know, not watch too much here or read too much. I hope it does well. Like I enjoyed all the Guardians movies. I went back and rewatched the first two in my long travels on my long bus rides. And so I was like, okay, yeah, these are, especially the first one. I think the first one is just one of the best.
Pretty sure I had it really highly rated on my top Marvel films. A little too high for your liking, but.
Maybe a little too high for my liking, but it's still really good. I felt like 2 was a big step down. I did not enjoy 2 as much as I did 1. And I was not as big of a fan of the Christmas special as many other people were. No. It was kind of like, so I'll go see it. I'll see. I don't know. Disney's stacked this summer, and this is just the beginning. And I wonder if they're going to be their own worst enemy with we have The Little Mermaid opening in just 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks. And then shortly after that, like, we have Elementals. Shortly after that, we've got Indiana Jones. I mean, it's just like they're putting them out this summer. So I don't know if the box office is going to have the fervor that it's had on past, you know, big tentpole movies like they might be hoping for.
I went and looked up because I was curious. I couldn't remember what did Super Mario make in its opening weekend, because it's been going gangbusters, over $1 billion. And it was right. $204 million. So double what this movie got in its opening weekend, at least. I think this is all domestic. I can't remember if I'm looking at the right numbers right now. I think this is all domestic. So it might. I think Super Mario Brothers, unless something else comes out that like is going to top it, is Elemental going to top it? Is one of these other films, like, I don't know. Is there another Marvel film that would outdo it? I don't think there's anything else on the horizon. There's not like a Top Gun. I need to be looking at my notes list. My notes list right now as we're talking about it. But
don't we have a Fast and the Furious film coming out this summer?
That could. So, yes. So Fast and Furious, Mission Impossible, Oppenheimer, and Marvel, and the Marvels, all of those could be potential, are in the running for toppling Mario this year. But I don't know.
I don't know. I think what gives Mario legs is its broad crossover appeal. Like, there's just, you can, like, we said it, you know, the last time we talked about this, we're going to love it. Our sons loved it. You know, Lewis is still begging to go back. And when we were in the theater, there was a lot of people there who were not there with kids, who were definitely in their 20s and in their 30s and in their 40s. You know, so you're just going to get a little bit of everything. None of those movies you just listed are going to have that broad crossover appeal like Mario did.
And I'm just going to give you a little bit of a hint right now. And you can probably guess it from, because of some of the trailers that are out there, that you get more of Rocket's backstory in here. There's definitely some things that I'm not going to rush to have my son watch the latest Guardians movie, because it gets a little intense with some of the just the way that they treat animals and stuff like that, which you kind of get from his from Rocket's history. Like, it goes deeper into that and shows you more of that. So I'm just not going to take my son to go see that. It's already intense enough, but like, when that throws it in there, I'm like, nope, I'm just, when you get to the rabbit, I just want you to text me afterwards, and then we can have maybe we have that whole conversation on here about the rabbit. Well, not giving anything away, but it's pretty intense. This is definitely not a kid's movie.
There was a thing going around Twitter of PETA protesting the movie. Like, there was multiple people saying they weren't going to go see this because of the animal cruelty depicted in it. I don't think it was big enough to cause any, you know, effect, but
I hope
it is symptomatic of.
I hope nobody watched this and said, "Ooh, I am now really invested in wanting to torment animals because of watching this film." If you this, I felt like this could have been a PETA front and center, sponsored by them to some degree.
Like, but this is why we don't do this.
Exactly. But this is why we don't do this to CGI animals that are not real, that all of the things. But next week, hopefully, we'll see if Eddie's got time to go. He just came back from a trip. Maybe he doesn't have 3 hours to go spend at the movie theater. We'll see.
No, the better way to phrase that is, I left my wife alone with three kids for a week. Am I stupid enough to leave her for an additional 3 hours so that I can go see a movie? We'll see if I'm that stupid.
We'll see. We'll see.
Or how happens. Kind she is really what it is.
Yeah. Well, next on the news, I sent you an article literally right before we started this. I don't know if you got to read any of it, Eddie. It was Scarlett Johansson. Did. Yeah. She kind of coming out to kind of talk a little bit about the whole, about life and work and all the other blah, blah, blah stuff that stars want to talk about whenever they get a writer, reporter. This one from Yahoo. Or no, I guess it's through Variety. Never mind. It is through Variety. Yeah. But she actually opened up a little bit about not only she opened up about the lawsuit from 2021 with the whole issue around her movie going straight to or going like losing out on a ton of money at the box office with Black Widow and that whole how she went and sued Disney, which was like almost that was unheard of, especially for a woman to sue a big corporation like that. Eddie, anything stick out to you from that article or her conversation?
Yeah, a couple of things. The first, she goes to Disney World 10 times a year.
A Disney adult. Joe Scarlett Johansson is a Disney adult.
That's like that is amazing. That, that's incredible. So I thought that was quite amazing, which makes me hopeful. The other thing that was mentioned in the article that was very exciting was that her in Taika Waititi's movie about the Tower of Terror is still in the works and going ahead, which very excited about that. Then to like fully picture and realize she's a huge Disney nerd. Okay, like you're going to do this really well because there's a lot of potential there, especially the original one in Hollywood Studios is got a lot more to it. Like there's moments where you like ride through multiple scenes and like there's a really good story potential there that I'm hopeful for. I'm excited for.
Couple of notes that I thought was interesting and just how she's kind of let bygones be bygones. Well, now that she got paid, that could be a big part of why.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's a big part of why she is in a good headspace. But she said at the time when the lawsuit came out, she said, I couldn't even walk through a restaurant without somebody saying, good for you, stand up for yourself. I could see it had a bigger impact. And I got support from strangers that had no skin in the game at all. But then now, kind of like where she's at now, she says, I think it's because I can separate the creatives at Disney from the business affairs department. I've had such a great working relationship with so many creatives there and continue to. I believe in the magic of Disney. I'm able to still appreciate that and let the callousness of that interaction sully my relationship and history with them because they're two separate things. And I'm like, good for you. This is what we hope for our stars. This is what we hope for the people that we go out to the theater for, that they can, we all understand it's a business. We all understand there's money changing hands and not changing hands. And I would hate for this to be the reason that we never got to see her in any other Disney films because she's obviously an amazing actress. She's a lightning rod at the movie theaters. So I think that's awesome that's the way she's kind of taking this and processing it. Through all of this.
Well, I'm sure it also helps that they fired the guy who made all of the stupid comments.
Might have had a little bit.
That goes a long way.
She might have lit the match. One thing I did not know, and I'm dying reading this, this little nugget that evidently everybody else knew, but I didn't know about this. So I'm just going to, Eddie, just pretend like this is brand new information for you because you probably already know this. She actually lost out on the role for Black Widow. She did not get the role of Black Widow. That went to Emily Blunt. I don't know if you read this in there. It went to Emily Blunt, but then she backed out of it because she had a prior contractual obligation with Fox. This is the movie that she lost out on a 10-picture iconic role for, Gulliver's Travels. Did you even remember they did that movie?
No. I am legitimately
okay. So I'm not the only one.
I did not know this. You're not the only one. What? So it could have been Emily Blunt, but she went and did Gulliver's Travels with Jack Black, right? Jack Black
was it? Oh yes, it was. I forgot she was even in that film. I remember him being in it. I did not remember she was in it.
There's another funny. I love the Long Way Round, Down, and Up series, the Ewan McGregor motorcycle stories. And there's a great moment in The Long Way Up where they're in the middle of like nowhere, Bolivia, and Gulliver's Travels is playing on a screen. And they just kind of like stop and watch it. And Ewan McGregor is in that movie. And he's like, I forgot I was in this movie.
That's...
Like, he didn't even remember the movie.
That's incredible. This is how everything coming together.
So she missed out being Black Widow. Wow. And that, I don't know. I don't know if I can wrap my head around Emily Blunt being. So one of my favorite movies of her is the one with Tom Cruise. It's got a weird title, like
Live, Die, Repeat.
Yes.
The renamed, as Live, Die, Repeat.
It's such a fantastic movie. So like she can obviously be
the physicality,
an incredible action
the physical,
star. No questions about it. I guess now Scarlett Johansson is just so known for that, for the role of Black Widow. It's hard to think of anybody else.
One of my favorite anecdotes from that whole film is not, obviously she did great in that. We loved that. Day After Tomorrow, I think, was the original title, and they changed it to Live, Die, Repeat, which is, I don't know if that helps or not, whatever. But one of the fun nuggets from that is the trainer that helped Emily Blunt get into shape for that role. And there's like an iconic moment from the trailer where she does this like crazy bend as she's like working out. That single scene has gotten him more work as a trainer for female actresses that like just come to him and say, I want to look like Emily Blunt from that scene in Day After Tomorrow. And it's just like over and over again, that's what people are asking him for. And like, that's his whole business now because of that one film, that one scene with her.
There it is. Yeah, good for Scarlett Johansson. I am looking forward to the Tower of Terror movie. That was probably the big thing for me at this.
And happy to know that she is also a Disney adult, like the rest of us here on this podcast, like, and probably you listening to this podcast. So last thing before we get into the movie today, we can't ignore the big thing that's happening in all of Hollywood right now. It literally happened right after we recorded last week, and that is the shutdown due to the writer's strike right now. Feels like we're back in 2007, Eddie. I'm waiting for all the late night hosts to have to be doing their own sketches and own bits that they come up with, and then you realize, oh, these guys are better on camera than they are writing their own stuff. Yeah. But yeah, so the WGA writer strike is happening right now. This is affecting about 11,500 Hollywood television and movie writers that are actually a part of the WGA. And it's a massive deal right now, because obviously that affects everybody else ancillary to not just the writers, but the productions that are shut down. I just saw a video where they said, hey, we were able to stop a Marvel film from continuing to work. The Blade movie is now on hiatus, on halt. Eddie, tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing about this writer's strike.
Well, I remember this distinctly in 2007. We were in college, and this is like you get like truncated seasons of everything. You know, that was one of the weirder seasons of Lost. That was one of the weirder seasons of The Office. Like, it just, you realize how much, like we've said it so many times, if you don't have a good story, a bit of acting or directing can lift that up. It doesn't matter. If you don't have it, it's just not going to come through. And yeah, we're seeing that here. What's shocking to me in all of this, I remember from 2007, one of the main complaints was the new formats that material or content was being distributed. Specifically at that time was iTunes, when you could buy episodes, watch them on your iPad and everything. This is pre-streaming still in 2007. Like, I remember in 2007, like ABC and a couple others, you could like watch a couple of episodes. Yep. And it was horrible quality, you know, like on their website, like ABC Go or something weird like that. But this was one of the big complaints, was how do they get compensated for these new formats that content was being distributed in? And that's pretty much the beef in this strike as well, is now everything's going through streaming and going out, and they're not getting a penny for all of that. Which, yeah, is crazy. Like, if you're writing something, if you're creating something, and they're making money hand over fist in all of these different avenues, like, you should get compensated for that little bit of that. So, yeah, it's just fascinating. It feels like we're reliving history all over again. So
it's funny. I feel like I had a little bit of a precursor to this because I had a friend, David. He told me about this, the strike happening a couple of weeks ago, because there's a project we were working on that we wanted to get out the door quickly so that maybe that could be something that they could pitch to people who are looking for content now that content was about to dry up for a bit. So that was interesting. I was like, oh, it actually did happen. We're actually got a little bit. It was news, that inside scoop that I didn't really know. Hey, I needed right now.
Do you know how long the last one went for?
The last one went for 100 days. I do not remember it being that long, but it kind of makes sense. It was basically all of the summer and fall of that year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the big things that they're talking about that the WGA is pushing for is there's just not as much money in streaming as there is in television and in movies. So one writer said that his residual checks went from like $12,000 for a network show that he was getting. Then he got his residual finally for a streaming show he did, and it was $4. Like, that level of intensity of what you get paid for big network things and what you get paid for streaming is vastly different. Then they're also, on top of this, you notice a lot of these Netflix shows, a lot of these streaming shows, they're like 10 episodes versus the 22, 24 episodes that we used to get with our big network shows like Lost and Alias and stuff like that back in the day. And the other fascinating part of this is, so we've got compensation on one side, then the other, and Nerdist does a great video all about this, all about their, the WGA strike and what's going on with it. That's where I got a lot of this information from. But AI, they are so afraid of AI taking away their jobs that some of the things they're pushing for in negotiations, yes, is they want to regulate the use of AI in projects. They are saying AI can't write or rewrite literary material. So I'm assuming that's adaptations from books like Jane Austen. I'm assuming that's part of that. And then also they don't want AI to be allowed to be used for source material. Like, oh, I got the script and it's based off of an AI prompt. And they also are saying you can't use MBA material. So like a writer goes and writes something, they shove it into AI and say, hey, write this, but as a Western. And now they've got, or using it to train AI to write like them. Like, I want to write this like Wes Anderson or something like that. Although he's more visual than right. audio, like, or some other, like Christopher Nolan.
Like an Aaron Sorkin.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. That's what I was looking for. But isn't this crazy? Like, these are the two worlds now we're living in, where they're so worried about compensation and AI.
No, AI, it's like Elon Musk has been beating this drum. Like, everybody wants to talk to him about Twitter and stuff. And he's like, yeah. Do you not see what's going on with AI? Like, apparently he flew out to DC and met with a whole bunch of lawmakers begging them, like, please give us some regulation on all this AI. Like, it's growing so fast. It's going, you know. When you think of AI, you jump to Terminator and you think of Skynet. Like, but it's actually going to be more like what you're discussing here. It's going to just read, you know, no pun intended, like rewrite society. Like, it has the potential of being fundamentally like shifting. What we're looking at is like the second technological revolution. We had the internet, and that brought us into the age of information. AI, like, this is happening so fast and so quick, it's going to transform everything, and we'll wake up and not realize. So good on them to think now and be like, no, we want this dealt with now. We want protection now.
I can only imagine.
Not going to be the only industry.
I can only imagine what these negotiations would have looked like maybe 2 years ago. Like, would they, if this deadline or whatever happening with why they're doing the strike right now, if they're in negotiations, if the contract's ending, what would have happened if this was like 2 years ago? Because AI in a year has jumped dramatically from where it was. I started hearing about it, like 3 months ago, 6 months ago. And then all of a sudden, that new version of ChatGPT just like sent it to the stratosphere, the newest version of Midjourney and DALL-E 2. just took it to another place really quickly and it caught off guard. There is a part of me, though, that feels like some of the people that are the most vocal against it, there's a part of me that feels like, are you just against it because you were caught flat-footed and you weren't ready for it? Like, and you don't have a business engine to take advantage of it. There's a little bit of part of me that was like, of course you don't want them to take over because you have vested interest yourself in some of these things. But that's my conspiracy part of me talking.
Well, right, what's funny, Elon Musk owns one of those companies that is like at the forefront of developing the AI technology.
Which one?
And they're all, I can't remember which one, but like the one of the primary sources is coming out of one of his, one of the places like he's funded and built. And they're all like, hold on, isn't this like counterintuitive to like your own business? And he's like, yes, that's how scared I am of this. Like I'm willing to shoot my own business in the foot.
Okay. I'll trust you then, Eddie. Well, that's it for Disney news for today, because we need to spend a good amount of time here to just delve in another Pixar classic film here. As today we are getting so close to the end here, Eddie, on all of our movies for 2005. We're getting so,
I feel like we say that every week now.
We say it every week, but I think, is this it? No, not, next week is going to be it. Next week is going to be the last one. But today we're here to talk about, as we set up in the title, The Incredibles.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, the IMDb description for The Incredibles is this. While trying to lead a quiet suburban life, a family of undercover superheroes are forced into action to save the world.
Dun, dun, dun. That's a great IMDb description, by the way.
100% on board with you on that. This was not the first time I saw any behind the scenes making of series for something. I had seen that with Lord of the Rings, obviously. I think I've talked about that like really like took and poured gasoline on my filmmaking heart. But this movie was the first behind the scenes of an animated film I had ever seen. I didn't know how they made animated films before this. And then we had rented or bought The Incredibles, and the DVD had an extra DVD with the special features. And that's how I learned all about how they make it and design it and all the 3D animating and the motion stuff. Like it was incredible, and that it just lit my heart. So as I was thinking about this film, that's one of the things I was thinking about before. What I just wanted to mention is why this film has a little good place in my heart.
I would echo that. I distinctly remember in the making of DVD, there are a few moments where Brad Bird, the director, just kind of like pontificates on animation and like what is animation. And like one of the things that always sticks out to me from that is he has one of his just kind of soapbox moments where he talks about how, yeah, it irks him that so many people view animation as a genre. Like, oh, well, that's an animated movie, but I'm going to go make that, you know. And he's like, no, animation is not a genre. It is a medium. Like, it is just like live action or, you know, or black and white or whatever you want to call it. Like, animation is just a medium. It's just we were so used to like one style of movie coming out from animation. And that I think that's one of the amazing things with Pixar is they bend genre now we're seeing other studios start to do this, but they really bend genre with the movies that they come out with, the animated. And Incredibles, I don't know, maybe is the first to really, really do that, to just kind of go, okay, we're gonna play with this. We're gonna go a whole different direction, and it's part of the reason why this movie stood out then and still carries. You know, this was prior to the superhero craze when this came out. This is 2004. We're a good 4 years until Iron Man comes out and kicks off the MCU. Yeah, we've got some Spider-Man and stuff like that going on.
Spider-Man,
but it's nowhere near. It's nowhere near the fever pitch, you know, that we hit, you know, even now. And so it just felt so fresh, so original. And like how, and to put the twist on it of being like a family of superheroes and everything. Yeah, I don't know about you, but like when I first saw it, it was just like, I've never seen anything like this. And I love it.
Well, they did two things with this one. The big, well, three things really. This was their first attempt at a animated film led by humans, like where they are the subject of the majority. Everything else has been monsters, ants, toys. You might get one or two, like you get Sid or somebody like that for a hot second. Mm-hmm. But this was all human led, which we have a whole, we might need a whole section for the animation. And this is not like the pinnacle of their animation skills by any means, I would say. Mm-hmm. But then you also get its genres. It's a period based. So you've got like a 60s vibe to a lot, 50s, 60s vibe to a lot of this. A lot of the artwork and the animation, the style and the tone. And then it's also a undercover, like James Bond type feel of the story. They kind of do multiple things here. So two genre things. Plus, this is a big deal of them going human based for their first film.
Yeah. And I would agree with you. For me, probably the weakest part of the movie is, yeah, there's some weird animation that comes out. There's just like a few moments.
The mom in the kitchen is just, yeah. We laugh yeah. about it. Like anytime this movie's on, we're like, this is the worst. When she's on the phone with him, it's just the trees that are out of focus in the background. And like, is there even glass in that window? That looks like you're on a porch. This is just, it's not. It's the weakest link by far in this film. But yeah, like this was a big jump.
But every other link is strong. It's very, very strong. Like you've got some incredible voice acting.
Yes, voice. Oh yeah, let's start there. I was going to jump to music. We can get to music, but great acting by Craig.
I was saving the best for last.
Craig T. Nelson, Holly Hunt, just like Samuel L. Jackson. Rain is like the second banana in this film, and he does a great job in it. But all of the cast throughout that voiced all the people in here were just really good.
And I think you have to give a shout out to Brad Bird voicing Edna Mode. A lot of people don't know that. I mean, it's in the documentary that we're referencing. He kept saying like, we need somebody who sounds like this, and he would like do the Edna Mode voice. And like after saying this for multiple times, I think finally like the casting director's like, you should just do this. Like that is perfect. And so they have him. He's the voice of Edna Mode. So the director.
Is Edna Mode the best part of this film? Because she absolutely steals every line scene she's in. It's incredible. Like she's captivating.
I don't know if I would say she's the best. For me, I would say character-wise, the best is just seeing a family dynamic with the superhero stuff thrown on top. To me, like that there's the secret sauce. And you're like, is it? And then you have the whole Jack-Jack sequence at the very end. And you're like, yeah, yes, it is. And then they did the little short, like Jack-Jack attack where you mm-hmm. see all of that. And you're like, yes, the family dynamic and superhero stuff is just fantastic. But you're right. That's a very close second and is one of those. I think every good movie just kind of needs this tertiary character that is not the protagonist or the antagonist, but comes in and just like, boom, just puts the cherry on top, just really makes it something. And she is definitely that in this movie and what makes this so, so fantastic. Great villain. Yep. I love the backstory of Incrediboy becoming Syndrome and just kind of the plot with all of that is really good. And the reveal of it, like the build of the mystery with Mystique calling him and like ordering him in for the job and all of that. Like, and this movie, the writing, I just love the pacing of this so much. Like how you just get all of these different elements, but they come together and they flow in the three acts so wonderfully. And then you get the whole stuff on the island that is just fun, epic superhero sequence.
With Syndrome, what I love about this, because we recently, either on a recent episode, talked about the death of great Disney villains and how we just aren't getting that many good ones anymore. If it's like, oh, it's actually your mom the whole time. We're like, okay, this isn't that good. What I love about Syndrome is it balances the edge of, it gave him a real backstory that is somewhat sympathetic, but you can obviously go, you mm-hmm. obviously took that way too far and you should, and you, that was your choice. That was a choice versus, oh, woe is me. No one understands me. And of course I would make this decision, this horrible decision to do whatever. It's like, no, you've still got responsibility and it's still your decision to become an evil villain. Like, so that's what I love about him is it both gives us a relatable story to kind of logically set him up to where it's going, but then also like make him into a very unlikable character that you are actively rooting against. So that's what I do love about Syndrome. It's not like the greatest thing we've ever seen. Obviously there's still like the plenty of other like Scar and stuff like that that obviously rises above, but for this film you had a really like captivating bad guy that you were rooting against. And then, but you're right. The thing, the family dynamic really makes this film because it feels very real, authentic, even as they're like stretching and doing things that no one else can do. It's for a real human thing. And I what's pivotal to his character for sure is the time that we spent in the insurance building. Like all of those scenes are pivotal to what he then becomes later on and to setting up his trajectory. It all felt earned. And that's what I really loved about this.
Yeah. The character development across the board is really well earned. I liked how you said that. Even like what you said for Syndrome, like, okay, we sympathize as much as you need to sympathize with a villain. Like you see he is a humanity, but then like, yes, it is a choice. It is evil. Yeah, every little beat of it feels earned. Even a character like Frozone, where he just kind of like pops in and out. Like you get him in each act, right? In such a great little moment that builds on it. And his fight with his
wife.
Yes, it's classic, right? Like that fight, you know, where is my super suit? You know, like everybody quotes that and thinks of that. It's like one of the lines, which is crazy because... And not just for this movie, a lot think of it as like one of the classic lines of Samuel L. Jackson. Like you Google like famous Samuel L. Jackson quotes. It's not the top, like, you know, those need to be censored on a Disney podcast. But this is up there, which that speaks.
It's not snakes on a plane, but.
Right, right. But that speaks to the quality of this, that you get a line like that into the repertoire of an actor well known for his one-liners like that is quite incredible. So, yes, all around story, voice acting, all of that. But as you alluded to earlier, the score is phenomenal. And this is just another entry into the reasons why Michael Giacchino probably... I think by the end of his career, be close up there with a guy like a John Williams.
Wow. High praise, Eddie.
I mean, look at his Pixar repertoire. Let's just look at Pixar repertoire. I mean, you go from a movie like this, which is that big band brass, but still like so flexible, dynamic, where you get the superhero themes coming through. And then you jump into something like, let's just say like Cars 2, which is like James Bondy, guitar, surfer guitar, like that type of element. Then you go on to Ratatouille, which is another Brad Bird film, which is jazz and just beautiful. Then he jumps up to Up, which he finally gets the Academy Award for, which is like I think we talked about recently, like, what are pieces of music that have just lifted to the iconic, like a Star Wars? I think Up has reached to that level, mm-hmm. like that marriage sequence in particular. This, correct me if I'm wrong, is his first Pixar movie. They brought him in for this one, if I remember correctly. And the whole point of Incredibles was, let's bring in fresh blood. Let's Pixar did not want to sit on its laurels. They brought in Brad Bird from the outside. They brought in Michael Giacchino. Before that, like, Randy Newman had pretty much done every Pixar score. I love this score. This is on the list of things that we go and we listen to so much so that, like, my kids ask for it. Like, hey, can we listen to the Incredibles score while we play today? Things like that.
Movie has so many iconic scenes from, we've mentioned already several here, but just the whole montage sequence of him working out and getting in shape, the whole back and forth of, like, Mrs. Incredible thinking he's cheating on her, like he's having a midlife crisis, but really he's coming back into being a superhero and the misalignment, everything like that. That's amazing. The kids on the plane, that whole plane sequence was really special. I mean, everything at the island, I love the, just the blade ships that are like tracking them down. And then you get Dash running so fast that he's running on water. All of those moments, are just really, really awesome and just iconic, from this film. I forgot how many of those moments I'm just like, oh, I remember that. I remember that. Oh yes. This, like, it's hard to even nail down just one, from it. And then, already gushed about Edna Mode, but I just love anything. But I mean, her iconic line of "Pull yourself together, darling." Then she says, "Darling."
I love her sequence of why she doesn't put capes on superheroes and goes through, like, the montage. A lot, you know, like Jet Girl, you know, and like all of the different, like, examples.
1963.
Yes, exactly.
We ought to do a shout out for Carrie the babysitter. She's great. They made her this, like, very, like, put together type A. I've got all my ducks in a row. I'm gonna do this. You don't have to worry about me.
Braces.
And then she's just a melted mess at the end. And that Jack short is so good. And just seeing the other end of that, what happened back at the house is just special.
I think. I mean, I've always loved the Pixar shorts. We go and watch them all the time. But this was an interesting one because it was a way of, like, diving shortly back into some characters and just, like, opening that story up even more. And it was like, oh, this was so good. So well done. It was right of them to not put that sequence in the movie. Like, it would have been too much. But so smart of them to pull that off and kind of offer it as a side.
It was great. Anything else you want to touch on, Eddie, before we rank this film?
I got to give a shout out to the little kid on the tricycle where he's like, that was amazing. He's got a couple little moments there. And I guess. Yeah. It's just another sign of this movie has a way of kind of, like, grounding itself. Like, I love them playing the superhero tropes and kind of making fun of superhero movies even before superhero movies became so prolific. They just had a way of even making fun of them and humanizing it before, you know, it went crazy. So got to give a shout out to the little kid on the tricycle. All right, JB, I went first last time, so I'm going to make you go first this time.
You jump quickly.
This is a hard one.
Yeah, you jump quickly into
that. Well, because I knew what you were doing. I saw you take the deep breath, and I'm like, nope, I'm going to get him. I'm going to make him go first.
Okay, so watching back through this, there's so many great things in this film, so I'm going to give it a high rating. I'm going to give it a 4.5. That half mark is for the animation, because the animation really is pretty rough in a lot of this film, like worse than the original Toy Story, like 9 or 10 years ago level on some of this stuff, where it's just like, oh, like to the point where when we just rewatched Incredibles 2, because my kids loved the first Incredibles, and so they're like, let's watch the second one. And they almost had to dumb down some of the animation of, like, the characters and stuff in the second one so that it wasn't a massive departure from the one you knew. And so it's like, for that, it's like, so thinking about that, that's where I'm like, yeah, I can't give this thing a full 5 stars because the animation is pretty, it's pretty hard to watch it sometimes where you're just like, oh, this is, it's like they didn't fully bake some of these scenes and you, put this in theaters this way, right? Like, did you know you're putting this in theaters? So for that, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
So I think this is going to be one of those rare moments where we are swapped. I am going to give it 5 stars, not full gummy worm level, but just 5 stars for the reasons you stated. But for me, they're not strong enough. They just pulled it off of 5 gummy worms for me. It's still 5 fruit snacks. But I still think that this is one of the strongest stories in the Pixar repertoire. And if they were to decide tomorrow to come out with an Incredibles 3, I'd be totally fine with it.
The vibes I got watching this were kind of like when I hadn't seen Home Alone in a long time. And several years ago, when we got Disney Plus, we rewatched it. And I was like, this story holds up really well. And I'm buying every turn of this story and these characters and these people. That I got the same energy from this as that. Now, granted, that didn't have any CGI in it, so didn't have to worry about that whole extra half of a fruit snack or whatever.
But this is, you got to admit, like, this is just a really, really solid story. And I got to give just another shout out to Brad Bird. Like, particularly his animated films, The Iron Giant, the 2 Incredibles films, Ratatouille. Ratatouille was my favorite Pixar movie until Coco dethroned it. I just love how that guy tells a story and uses the medium in such a beautiful way.
He's got a bright future in this business.
Yeah, I think
he's going places.
Well, folks, with that, your life has been forever changed by another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review, or even better, share it with your best friend.
We should record our children right there going, please, for that one. You can also check us out at honeywemade.com, where you can see our full movie list as we continue to go through all the movies Disney made from 1988 to 2005, including next week when we review. JB, do you want to say it? What are
National
we reviewing next week?
Treasure.
Yeah, man.
I don't even need to rewatch it. I can do the review right now. I can do it right. I can do this all day. But thank you for listening. And remember, you can still do great things, or you can listen to Police Scanners.